and welcome to the third week of Teal Time with David Teal. I'm Jonathan Heater, and as always,
David Teal here on the job.
What a hectic first full weekend of college football. We have a lot to talk about.
Man, and to think, you know, the game of the week, the game of the century, the greatest opener of all time, that was a bust, but everything else was just, you were breathless at the end of it all.
Yeah, the Saturday night game with all the hype certainly didn't live up to it, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. The two games Sunday night, outstanding, and then the game last night to cap off the weekend was also a very, very competitive double overtime game.
Georgia Tech, they are such a bear to defend, and Taquan Marshall runs for like 2.5 and 5 touchdowns, and if Georgia Tech doesn't fumble there late, they're going to win the game by 2 touchdowns.
They are, if they take care of the football, they can be nearly unbeatable. But you see time and time again when they lose, it's because they put the ball on the ground a lot.
Yeah, and in special teams issues, you know, miss that field goal at the end of regulation. And then Paul Johnson, I mean, Virginia Tech fans are well acquainted with his penchant for going for on fourth down, regardless of field position, he's so confident in that offense, and he didn't want to go to a third overtime, so he's going for two, and it backfired on him. But I'll bet you, if given the chance to do it again, he would in a heartbeat.
He would absolutely. If you've watched Paul Johnson, he has no qualms going for an on fourth down, even in around midfield, in his own territory, or going for two.
No, and I think going forward, Jonathan, and we talked about this in preseason, I think we all thought that the Coastal was going to be, in essence, a three-team race between Miami, Virginia Tech, and Georgia Tech. And despite the Jackets losing last night, I'm still of that mind. I think they are going to be there.
I think it's a good loss, all things considered. You're going to be joined by Norm Wood. You guys chatted right after the game on Sunday night between West Virginia and Virginia Tech. So we'll go to that in a second. But I first wanted to talk about seems to be, at least to me, the big storyline coming out of week one in the ACC, and that is the season-ending injury to Florida State quarterback DeAndre Francois.
Wow. I mean, it's – and he is – and I saw it happen in my hotel room Saturday night, and to watch that young man's body language, it was painful. And he is such a gallant quarterback. I mean, he got the tar beat out of him last season.
And during that game.
Yeah, and he keeps getting up for more. And you can tell the way his teammates and coaches speak about him, that he has their respect, if not admiration. And I feel badly for him, especially in the Florida State program, because moving forward with a true freshman in Blackman, Florida State recruits big-time athletes. I get it, but true freshmen are rarely ready for that caliber of football, especially at that position.
All right, we'll come back to Alabama, Florida State after Norman, you talk about the game that you guys got to witness Sunday night in Maryland.
Norm, we have commandeered a radio booth here at FedEx Field.
Taking this joint over.
That's right. We're well into Labor Day morning, and I think we're both just trying to digest what we just saw here as Virginia Tech opened with a 31-24 victory over West Virginia. I'll ask you, first impressions, Hokies, Josh Jackson. Wow.
Yeah, pretty impressive first game, first sort of college game debut for Jackson, especially when you look at the fact that he was sort of asked to be efficient and not turn the ball over. And, you know, all we'd heard kind of leading into the season was the fact that he's, you know, really good between the years at sort of managing the game. And we had nothing to go on other than the spring practice and spring game and maybe a hour and a half of preseason practice, but to look at, but he certainly was, with 235 yards passing and a touchdown. Didn't throw any picks. Really, in my mind, only had one or two sort of questionable passes.
He missed Phillips in the end zone. He short hopped him there, and then I thought he missed Savoy being open on the far sideline. But they were both in the first half,
and neither one of them I thought was egregious as far as like that's a pick. You know, oh man, he got away with one on that.
Oh yeah,
they were just kind of.
I don't think they came close to picking.
Exactly. Yeah. So, and then you add in the 101 yards rushing and the big 46-yard run to set up the game-winning touchdown run by McMillian. I mean, he came through, and obviously, he's a studier for sure, man. I mean, you look at it, he said after the game this was a game and a team that he'd broken down that 3-3-5 defense since January, and, probably had a little bit of an advantage. He knows the defensive coordinator, I guess, through connections with his dad, coached at Michigan and all that. So how about your impressions? What do you come away with from this game? Obviously, Jackson played well, but that defense, I guess, is something that they're going to have to be concerned about, you would think, maybe, though this is a pretty unique offense.
It is, and 597 yards?
Two,
almost,
yeah.
592, almost 600 yards for the Mountaineers. But yet, 24 points is more than reasonable.
Yeah.
And in today's college football landscape, West Virginia's going to – in the Big 12,
mm-hmm.
I'm guessing that's a squad that's going to average 35, 40 points a game.
You would think. I mean, in Holgorsen's six previous seasons at West Virginia, they've only averaged under 31 points in one season. So, I mean, they're definitely going to put up some points for sure.
I mean, I thought Greer was – big time, and Gary Jennings Jr. and David Sills. I mean, they gave the Hokies fits now. So, and we were talking during the game. They did it just about every way you could. They beat them on slants,
mm-hmm.
and then when Tech tried to cover those, and they went vertical, mm-hmm. especially in the second half.
Donis Alexander really struggled on some of those slants. We talked about that a little bit in our online stories that you'll see. And gave up, I guess, one slant on a 4th-and-2 play that I think resulted in a touchdown eventually for West Virginia, and then on a scoring play for West Virginia. So, those are things they got to get ironed out for sure.
Yeah. I mean, we were both on deadline tonight. I don't know if you got to mention this. I know I didn't. A huge sequence was when West Virginia's driving. They're inside the 30. I think they're on, they're second and short maybe. Get a hold.
Mm-hmm.
And then Holgorsen gets the 15-yard unsportsmanlike.
Yep.
So all of a sudden, they're second in forever, and they're out of field goal range. They end up having a punt.
Yeah.
So to me, that was a huge
mental breakdown. Yeah.
Oh yeah, I mean yes, Tech got a 15-yard unsportsmanlike for one of its assistant coaches later on. But that's one thing I really like about Justin Fuente that I noticed all last season. He is just so unflappable
mm-hmm.
on the sideline. He stands there with his arms folded, and you don't know if he's down 24-0 to Arkansas or if he's, beating Virginia's drums.
Well, he momentarily gave an official some grief for that call.
Oh, I mean, did he?
He did. He got
on the false start because they thought West Virginia was in the neutral zone.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. It wasn't so much about the unsportsmanlike on one of the assistant coaches, it was the false start. So yeah, but you're right, man. He is very stoic almost on the sidelines. So,
but getting back to Josh Jackson, we have all mentioned that he's the first redshirt or freshman of any type to start a quarterback since Tyrod in 2007. He's the first freshman to start the season opener since Michael Vick in 1999. But you go back to Michael Vick's first start. That's at home against James Madison.
Yeah.
No offense to my alma mater. Tyrod's first start in 2007 was at home against Ohio.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't compare to being in FedEx Field on national TV against an old rival in West Virginia, two ranked teams, season opener. I mean, what that kid did tonight, to me, I was amazed at how efficient, I mean, not even close to a turnover. Good on that kid.
I mean, and the funny thing is, you know, we see him and we talk to him post-game, and you know, he's standing down there just like it's a midweek press conference, you know, and he's just talking about, you know, what he did over the weekend or something. He's very calm and, you know, nothing seems to rattle him. And, you know, he's just, and Fuente has said this, you know, he just plays, and Cam Phillips even mentioned it too. He plays above his years, and he's way mature, you know, far more mature than you might think, you know, a 19-year-old should be, I guess.
Well, special teams. Justin Fuente mentioned them a little bit afterward. I mean, they got the big return from Clark that immediately preceded Jackson's touchdown pass to Cam Phillips, and wow, was he wide open.
Yeah.
You know, really the only miscues on special teams were the missed field goals. Really, the chippies by Joey Sly, who'd only missed four kicks inside of 40 yards his entire career.
Yeah.
And misses two tonight. There'd have been a whole less drama tonight if he hits either of those.
Especially the late one that would have given him a two possession. He made it a two possession game with under 2 minutes left at that point. And one that kind of went unnoticed too was the punt. Bradburn, of course.
Oh,
Oscar Bradburn
had
a huge night too in his first game. 46.5 yard average on 8 punts, and you know, uncorked a 54 yarder, and 3 of them go inside the 20, including one where the long snapper, Colton Taylor, snaps perfect snap and then gets down the field and downs the ball at the 3 yard line. I mean, things that you don't notice. You know, West Virginia doesn't score in that possession. The drive stalls, and you know, it's little things like that. But then, you know, like you said, the big things like, you know, Joey Sly missing, you know, in what's usually an automatic situation for him inside the 40. That's going to be something that they're going to have to worry about here going forward if that becomes an epidemic for him. But again, first game, it's too early to say that.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, he'll be fine. Fuente talked a lot, and he has since he got here. He doesn't care who gets the carries. Mm-hmm. Well, it was truly tailback by committee tonight. McLeese 8 for 51. He really did give him a spark. He had that one spin move where he bounced a play outside. He had a rushing touchdown. Peebles 13 for 42. McMillian 9 for 35. What's that? That's 30 carries for almost 130 mm-hmm. yards for the tailbacks. They'll take that every week.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, we didn't even see Jalen Holston, the stud freshman that they're supposed to have. And you know, he's supposed to be a power guy between the tackles. Didn't need him tonight. You know, I mean, 45 carries for 234 yards as a team. And you know, they got Deshaun McLeese back in the mix again after only having him for a game last year against Liberty, and he was promising in that game, but you know, he ruins his shoulder, and he comes back and looks strong tonight too. And you know, there was a period of time there where we saw Peoples kind of 11-yard carry and then a 5-yard carry to kind of get them rolling on their first scoring drive. And you know, we were kind of wondering if Trayvon McMillian was even going to get a carry at that point. Mm-hmm. And
then all of a sudden he's carrying the ball for the winning touchdown.
So they all had a little piece there, you know, as far as the running backs were concerned.
Yeah. So nobody has to go home and sulk.
Wonder where they're at.
Yeah. Nope. Yeah. They really, really don't.
And they didn't turn the ball over. Nobody put the ball on the ground. You know, there's no, you know, and this was a hard hitting West Virginia team. I mean, for the most part, you know, that's impressive. I think that they get out of this game as young as they are without any turnovers.
What do you think of the offensive line tonight? They've got the two new starters with Chung and Pfaff. I'm pronouncing that correctly, right?
Yeah.
Braxton Pfaff.
I mean, a couple of big penalties, you know, and they didn't wind up hurting them that much. You know, Chung, I guess, had the – well, I guess they did. Actually, Chung had the false start at the 3 that pushed him back to the 8.
Yeah, and they had to settle for the field goal early. Yep.
So that one did make a difference. And obviously, given the outcome, that's a big play. Taylor, I think, also had a false start too.
But they overcame that.
And they overcame that one, so it didn't really make that much of a difference. And I guess they gave up one sack, which is not that big of a deal, obviously. And I don't know if this is the most ferocious pass rushing team that they're going to see, but
I thought they acquitted themselves fairly well.
Yeah, I didn't think. I mean, and then you look at the fact again, they had 234 yards rushing. So yeah, I mean, I don't think you can give anything but a check mark for those guys coming out of this game. You know, whether you give them an A or a B, it's probably a B plus type game, maybe, given the couple of penalties, the one big penalty by Chung, but that's maybe grading too hard, maybe A minus,
Yeah. We have tag teamed together so many of these big openers with Virginia Tech, both the Alabama games, the Ohio State game at home, the Boise State game here, the Southern Cal game here. None of them turned out well for Virginia Tech. This one obviously different. How do you envision this propelling them the remainder of the season?
Well, it's interesting because after the game, there's a lot of talk from Fuente and some of the players about, having to turn around and prepare for the next game in 6 days. But come on, it's Delaware. I mean, if you're going to have any sort of situation where you got a short turnaround as it is, such as it is anyway. I guess you want to play an FCS team, but
and a poor one,
and not a fantastic FCS team.
Back to back 4-7 seasons,
exactly. So maybe it's the best case scenario when you look at it that way. You kind of start to build momentum, and the good thing is, if you look at the schedule now, like, it sets up really well for them being 4-0 going into that Clemson game.
Dude,
I mean,
wrote that in the column
because you've got a horrible East Carolina. Sorry, I mean, I don't want to downplay your alma mater's big win against East Carolina this past weekend. But
you can't get spanked at home like that.
By 27 points? It was 34-7 or whatever it was. But, I mean, you got a horrible ECU team. You got Old Dominion coming to town, which, that should be a win also. And then Delaware. So no reason for this team not to be 4-0 and, potentially top 15 in the country when Clemson comes to town for what will be an enormous game at the end of the month. Because if they somehow, and we don't want to look this far ahead, I know, but if they somehow can pull that one out, look out, man. I mean, you're going into October into the meat of league play at 5-0. I mean, that's pretty heady stuff if you can get to that point. But, it's got a ways to go.
Yeah.
So the big thing is, they come into a place here where they – lost three times, and all of them they'd led in the second half, and a couple of them were really heartbreaking scenarios, and here they are. They're leading late again, and West Virginia's marching down the field.
15 yards away from
you said, what happens if West Virginia scores a touchdown, will Holgorsen go for two?
I really thought he
would. It could have been another heartbreaking situation for Tech.
I just had a hunch, kind of like Fuente last year against Clemson, in the ACC championship game. I was convinced Fuente was going to go for two in Orlando, and he confirmed it. We didn't get a chance to ask Holgorsen after the game tonight. But I just kind of had a suspicion that he might have. But I agree with, and here's the crazy thing. After tonight, Tech has a hell of a lot better chance to be undefeated going into September 30th, than Clemson does.
Yeah.
Clemson's got to play Auburn this week, and then they got to play Louisville.
Okay.
At Louisville.
I didn't know what their schedule looked like after Auburn, but man, yeah, that's
that back to back. When you have to play Auburn at home and then go to Louisville.
How crazy would it be if we get to September 30th and Tech is ranked ahead of Clemson? I mean, we got to see how the dominoes fall between now and then. But like you say, Clemson's got a tougher road between now and then, and there's certainly no indication that Clemson's going to stumble or anything before that game. But it's shaping up at least very early here to be an enormous one.
Wide receiver was a big question mark coming into the season. Cam Phillips, the one known commodity. Fabulous tonight, 7 catches for $138, and Jackson's 1 touchdown. The other guys, Cunningham got loose for the one big play off a terrific play fake by Jackson.
Where was Kuma? Where's Eric Kuma tonight? I mean, was he even targeted?
I think maybe one time I recall.
Yeah. So yeah, that was a guy that was supposed to be a factor, and Sean Savoy as we kind of heard in preseason had been impressive.
Hezekiah Grimsley, did you?
Grimsley.
What was he targeted tonight?
Yeah, that was. I mean, Grimsley. We didn't see much of, obviously, and you know, it's so. Yeah, it still remains a question mark. But I think I think if anything, teams will look at film tonight and decide definitively that they are going to have a real, real big problem with man coverage on Cam Phillips. I mean, they're going to, you know, and perhaps that opens things up for Savoy and Carroll and maybe Kuma and Grimsley and guys like that. We didn't hear anything from Phil Patterson tonight. Did he play even? I'm not sure if he got the game. Pampleton too. I mean, so maybe, you know, Cam's big night, 7 catches, 138 yards and a touchdown. You know, helps the rest of the group as we progress here.
I'll tell you what. After watching him on the kickoff returns, I'm convinced that the Ohio State transfer.
Yeah, Clark. Clark.
Yes, he's going to take one to the end zone this year.
Might be a race to see who gets in the end zone first, Clark or Stroman
on a punt return. You know? No, I thought Clark showed a lot of speed and potential on kickoff.
You're right,
returns.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, it's what time? It's about 1:30 in the morning, and we
time to get a jog in, right? I mean, you're gonna go back to the hotel here and get a run in. Or
I'm not sure how we're gonna play it, but yeah. It's been an eventful evening, and after tonight, I think it's gonna be an eventful season.
I do too. I mean, like I said, it's you know, this was such a question mark game, you know, to see, you know, if they could build momentum off of this one, then clearly it you know, makes the rest of the month far more interesting, and I think that's where they're at now. I mean, this was the hurdle they needed to clear, and you know, they don't want to get complacent, clearly, and I don't know, I'm not sure how complacent they'd have to get to lose to Delaware, but you know,
not happening.
Right, you look beyond that with East Carolina and ODU. Again, it just shapes up so well for them, and I think it becomes a very interesting team that the nation maybe takes notice of here, at least for the first month.
Yeah, and the beauty of it is, for Fuente and his staff, is they have all the ammunition to caution their players.
Yeah.
Hey, Howard beat Vegas.
Yeah, right, true.
Hey, James Madison beat East Carolina.
And did you see what happened to Texas A&M tonight against UCLA?
Liberty went down there and beat Baylor, so you better prepare for Delaware just like you would for Clemson.
Yeah.
So they're going to be fine. They're going to be 4-0 with Kelly Bryant and Clemson coming to town, and it is. It's going to be... That's going to be as electric a game as we've seen at Lane Stadium in quite some time.
Yeah, for sure. Going to be exciting. Exciting month.
All right, man. Good job tonight.
Yeah.
See you soon.
Yeah, we'll see you.
So getting back to the Florida State-Alabama game, obviously Francois gets hurt. Like you just said before you talked to Norm, they recruit well. So they're going to have a talented prospect in the game. But even though Francois didn't play great against Alabama, that's an Alabama defense.
Yes.
You have to think, going forward, that this now makes Clemson the prohibitive favorite in that division, right?
I do. And I was real – I know it's Kent State, but, boy, did Clemson come out and not mess around on Saturday. And Dabo Swinney, he was effusive after the game, talking about how impressed he was and how focused his team was, how it just took care of business against a team that clearly it should beat. But they never gave Kent State hope, ever. And Kelly Bryant looked like he'd been under center in Death Valley for 2 years instead of 2 minutes. And he may not be Deshaun Watson, but he can run and he can throw and he's got weapons around him. So I would agree. You know, Clemson, Florida State now, you kind of flip them. And if memory serves, do I have this right? Florida State goes to Death Valley this season. You know, that's a Clemson September is a bear. Auburn this week, Louisville next on the road, by the way. And then 2 weeks after that, Blacksburg.
Probably an undefeated Virginia Tech team.
It should be a Virginia, an undefeated Virginia Tech team. And I know we don't want to get out over our skis too much, but with Delaware, East Carolina, and Old Dominion in the offing, the Hokies should be 4-0 with Clemson coming to town. And as we were talking before we hit the record button, it's funny how sports come full circle. The last time Virginia Tech was 4-0 was 2011. Who did they play week five? Clemson at home. That didn't go so well, by the way, for the home squad.
And that's three more weeks of Josh Jackson getting confidence.
Absolutely.
And he looked pretty confident on Sunday night.
He sure did. If Sunday night doesn't give him confidence, I don't know what will, because that you know, he missed some throws. There's no question. And 15 for 26 is not a great percentage, but he did not turn it over, and he ran for 101 yards, and he was poised.
He's also a large person, right? He's much larger, obviously, than Michael Vick, and probably considerably larger than Tyrod Taylor, right?
Right. He downplayed his running ability during preseason, reminding everyone, look, I'm not Jerod Evans. No, he's not, because Jerod Evans is 6'4 and 240. But Josh Jackson did not shy away from contact, was unafraid to take it inside on the read option, and I thought looked very adept at making those reads, when to hand off, when to keep, you know, reading that end or that linebacker coming off the edge and determining what he needs to do.
He certainly looked pretty fleet of foot on that 40-something yard run.
46-yard run down the gut, and took a really hard hit from a defensive back as well.
So back to Bryant for Clemson. Obviously, ridiculous to compare him to Deshaun Watson, even though throughout the game, I watched a little bit of the early part of that game, you know, it's impossible to not reference the national championship winning quarterback.
Who, by the way, was on the sideline.
At the game.
So, yeah, you're right.
But they physically don't resemble each other at all. Bryant's a much larger quarterback.
Mm-hmm. He is, and probably, if push came to shove, more comfortable just dropping back and letting it go. If they're down by, you know, 10 points late and they have to go to that hurry up type of offense. He was very impressive. That is a promising young man.
But as we know, there's something a little bit more to quarterbacking than physical talent. Because if it was just physical talent, Jeff George would probably be in the NFL Hall of Fame, right?
Very, very true, just on arm strength alone. No, it is a very cerebral position. And then and coaches use this cliche a lot, there's the it factor. What's your presence? You used to say, what's your presence in the huddle? But so few teams huddle these days. I guess that's passe. But what's your presence at the line of scrimmage? When you're calling out protection, when you're calling out the play and you're getting the call in from the sideline, do you exude confidence? What do you like on the sideline when the defense is on the field and your guys all around you and the offensive coordinator is either barking at you from upstairs or right in front of you, depending on where he's stationed? You know, how do you respond? And what we haven't seen from Kelly Bryant or several quarterbacks around the, you know, how do you respond when you're down 10 on the road and it's the second half?
Sure. Execution is obviously a big part of playing quarterback, but also having the ability to, like, do what you said is Watson was so talented at being able to see what a defense was doing, to break it down, and, you know, not a lot of freshmen have that long of a rope to get adjusted to the game. You know, when you're coming in there and you're making your first start, I think probably a lot of that is scripted, right? All those plays, you're not being given a lot of freedom to make a lot of changes. It'll be interesting to see, like you said, when you have to make those changes, when you're playing a Louisville and you're in a shootout against Lamar Jackson, mm-hmm. or you're playing an Auburn, do you have the rope to make those changes, and can you make them?
I'm guessing Dabo Swinney and his staff will give him that freedom, because I think they really do trust him. And, you know, Auburn coming in there this week, you know, that's a top 15 squad. Now, Clemson has gotten the better of this series of late. In fact, opened up last season with a pretty tough win at Jordan-Hare. So it's going to be an interesting. I believe that's a night game. I'll be listening in the car on the way home from my game. But that's one of many. Another great week, coming up. You got USC, Stanford, and Notre Dame, Georgia. Mm-hmm. So some real marquee national games. And
Oklahoma, Ohio State.
That's right. You mentioned Lamar Jackson. For a Heisman Trophy winner, didn't get a lot of preseason attention just simply because of the Sam Darnolds and the Josh Rosens and the Josh Allens. Lamar Jackson, still a pretty good football player from what I saw Saturday night. Now, granted,
378, two touchdowns, and then another 107 rushing.
Yeah, and I understand it's Purdue, but still it was a reminder, I think, to everyone who follows college football that, by the way, that guy, he can still play.
I actually have it in my notes. I can't remember how many Heisman winners have come into the next season if they've returned with as little hype as he has.
Yeah,
and down the stretch last season, he obviously got out to a huge pace and I think probably had wrapped up the Heisman by late midseason. If there was a few more weeks in the season, maybe Deshaun Watson closes.
Yeah, he would have.
And so maybe there was already a little, I hate to say the word buyer's remorse, but a little souring on him as the season came to a close. And then coming into this season with the hype around the quarterbacks out west, he just hasn't had the attention. But that offense is very, very friendly for quarterbacks. And he showed again on Saturday that he's going to be very much, I think, in this Heisman race all season.
Well, when you lose your final three games and you're running for your life during many of those, and by the way, the quarterback at Southern California is just lighting it up in the Rose Bowl, the hype around you isn't gonna be much. And, it really wasn't through any fault of Lamar Jackson. Darnold was that good against Penn State, and his offensive line, Jackson's offensive line, was that bad.
We'll have all season to talk about the Heisman. And week to week, we talked about this. I think one of the early episodes you'd mentioned that we're in such a culture where we have to make these giant changes week to week, and everything's going to play itself out. But having said that, after a week, Darnold did not have a great outing against Western Michigan. Josh Allen played very poorly against Iowa,
yeah.
Josh Rosen.
How about that?
Who I had already included in my notes that night. Well, that's another one of the big three to take down. And then had one of the more miraculous fourth quarters in the history of college football.
It really was miraculous. The one thing, or the first thing that popped into my mind, because they were down 34, right?
Yeah.
I believe Maryland came from 35 back against Maryland, or against Miami.
Yeah.
With Frank Reich at quarterback, who ended up being a longtime backup to Jim Kelly in Buffalo.
But at Buffalo, had one of the more remarkable comebacks
in playoff NFL
history.
And that was in a playoff
game,
wasn't
it? Against the Oilers, right, yeah. It's Warren Moon. They were down 30-something in the second half.
There you go. Frank Reich, part of football history. Who knew that we were going to get Frank Reich, his mentions on the podcast?
I think, the Heisman is all about moments. And I think one of my biggest criticisms of the Heisman Trophy is that it often doesn't go to the best player in college football.
Oh, heck no.
Because if that was the case, I think Ndamukong Suh would have a Heisman.
By the way, I voted for him.
I think he would have a Heisman. Orlando Pace may have a Heisman. Larry Fitzgerald probably has a Heisman. We all know that the first priority is the quarterback on the best team. And then, a running back can jump in if they're on the best team.
Mm-hmm.
You have to put up otherworldly numbers like Lamar Jackson did or Johnny Manziel did, I think, to really jump in if you're going to be on a team that's 9-3 or 8-4. Or, you have a year like Joe Hamilton jumped into the, the Heisman race because Peter Warwick was suspended and didn't win ultimately because Ron Dayne had, you know, the capper of this career.
Yeah, that was the Michael Vick year. Yeah. That was 99 when Michael finished third in the voting.
Yeah. I think that Rosen had a moment on Saturday night that while it's only week one, he's going to push himself. He's going to give himself some grace period for at least a few weeks to remain at the top of that discussion.
Yeah, it was funny just kind of following that game on Twitter while we were at FedEx Field Sunday night. People were firing Jim Moore, dude. I mean, they were not firing him at the end of the season. They were firing him Monday morning or Monday afternoon.
At home, down 34 in the second half.
Yeah. And now they're all firing Kevin Sumlin. It's a beautiful world, college football.
Very rarely do you start a game firing one coach and end the game firing the other coach. But, you know, I tell you what, if I was a football fan and Kevin Sumlin got to be my head coach, I wouldn't feel too bad about that.
No, you'd be entertaining and you'd score points. And if by chance the Heisman race, you know, somehow comes down to Darnold and Rosen, it would be reminiscent of the late 60s when you had Gary Beben at UCLA playing quarterback and O.J. Playing tailback at USC. I believe they went 1-2 in the Heisman one year.
I can go back to the 80s, but you're taking me a little farther back than I'm prepared to talk about.
I take a lot of people farther back than they're prepared to talk about.
All right, let's talk about this week.
Sure.
So a couple big games, Louisville, North Carolina. North Carolina didn't have a great opener.
No.
In fact,
can't lose at home to Cal.
No,
just can't.
Not a great week for some ACC teams. North Carolina State blows a lead against South Carolina in a game they dominated. Georgia Tech blew a lead last night in a game they offensively dominated. Pitt needed OT to beat Youngstown State. So, all that said, what do you expect? Does Louisville face a test, do you think, this week from North Carolina?
Doubtful. I mean, defensively is where people wondered about North Carolina, and now I think they wonder even more. And I know the Tar Heels are at home on Saturday, but I think Louisville's going to go in there and just light them up. That said, the cautionary tale there would be, is there any gazing ahead to week three and the visit from Clemson?
That's the question, right? And Clemson has a huge game this week against Auburn. Auburn looks a little bit more like you would expect under Gus Malzahn with that offense. You have Auburn this week, then Louisville, and then Virginia Tech. What do you think is the biggest challenge among those three potential games? Do you think that if Clemson gets past Auburn, it's downhill, or is each week going to be a new test for them?
Well, I think having to go to Louisville and then I forget who they have in week four, but then having to come to Blacksburg, those are two really difficult places to play. I like the Clemson Tigers to win Saturday night in Death Valley. Just because I think, and I know they lost at home last season to Pitt, but I think they're going to get by Saturday night. But then those two road tests in September are going to be very challenging.
They have Boston College between those games, so yeah. not probably going to face a stiff test there.
No, I wouldn't think so.
If they can get through this first part through Virginia Tech undefeated, there is an open highway. With the Florida State injury to Francois.
Yeah, because from there, Clemson's most challenging games would be Florida State and Georgia Tech.
Right, and then, you know, potential ACC championship game against probably, I think at this point, Miami, Georgia Tech, or Virginia Tech. I guess we'll see Saturday night if Duke, what Duke has against Northwestern. Because Northwestern, some people have picked, you know, to be a contender in their division.
They are kind of a trendy pick. To come out of the opposite division of Ohio State and Michigan.
The minor leagues. Speaking of trendy picks, Pitt was a trendy pick. Ooh. Or not a trendy pick. Some people were picking them to win the division. They had a not a great effort against Youngstown State in the opener, and now they get Penn State.
Yeah, it's, you're talking about moving up in class, you know, the old boxing adage. That's, I mean, Pitt, the next 2 weeks, right? Penn State and Oklahoma State. So they're gonna go from facing Saquon Barkley and that ground attack to then the following week going against essentially an air raid type of offense with the Cowboys.
And then Georgia Tech the next week in Atlanta.
Man, that's a brutal stretch.
It's a rough stretch. I don't see how they can hang with Penn State. Barkley looked really sharp on Saturday. If there's going to be a running back that gets their name into the mix, I think, for the Heisman,
he would be it. I agree wholeheartedly.
And UVA at home against Indiana. Indiana played sharp for a half against Ohio State.
The Hoosiers did, Jonathan. And you talk about going from one opponent and then the antithesis of that opponent the following week. Saturday against William & Mary, Virginia was facing a first-time starter quarterback in Tommy McKee. Jimmy Laycock was going to play it close to the vest and did. There was no pace to the game. Now, all of a sudden, here comes Indiana. Against Ohio State, Indiana held the ball for only 28 minutes, ran 95 plays. That's a play every 17.8 seconds. That is Baylor tempo. That's faster than Baylor. It's going to be real interesting to me on Saturday, number one, to see if the Hoosiers attempt to replicate that pace, and number two, how Virginia's defensive depth holds up. You know, they're going to have to be deep, and their stamina's going to be seriously tested on Saturday.
Probably not as impressive a performance against William & Mary as they needed to.
If I'm a Virginia fan, I'm very disappointed. Huge questions about the offensive line going into the season, and even more now. I'm sorry, you've got to do better than 2.9 yards a carry against an FCS team and getting your quarterback sacked three times.
From a William & Mary team that had couldn't sack the quarterback last year.
Had 10 sacks in 12 games and then got three on Saturday. I think William & Mary had 8 or 9 tackles for loss. That should not happen. Virginia had its first turnover-free game since 2013.
Wow.
Yeah, gotta like that. Kurt Benkert had his moments, made some good throws, missed some as well. They did play well defensively, but now they've lost Tim Harris, the starting cornerback for the season, out with a wrist. That hurts. Major questions remain in Charlottesville.
For any chance of them to have a bowl, they have to win this week. They have to beat Connecticut.
Yeah.
And then they're gonna need to probably steal another game in the ACC. I think going out to Boise is going to be a tough task, right?
I think going to Boise is going to be very difficult for them. You know, their first two home ACC games are against Duke and Boston College. You know, need to make hay early because the schedule is seriously backloaded.
Right. You close with Georgia Tech, Louisville, Miami, Virginia Tech.
Mm-hmm. I think Pittsburgh's in that mix, too.
Pittsburgh's right before Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
So you better be at 5 wins going into Pitt because that last 5, that's maybe 1 win out of those 5.
Maybe.
Yeah. And conceivably could lose all 5. You'll be the underdog probably in all 5 of them.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we've covered this week, we've covered last week. Before we sign off, I just wanted to do a quick alma mater check. How did James Madison do over the weekend?
Whoa. First of all, they were favored in that game. Vegas liked them. And the boys in the desert knew what they were talking about, except I think they only favored them by 3 points. They went to East Carolina and just pounded them. Man. Scotty Montgomery are off to a rough start in Greenville. And, you know, the Hokies go there next week. And
name your score.
Yeah, I don't know. The Hokies have had trouble at Dowdy Ficklin of late. They should resolve those issues. I mean, Cardon Johnson, young man from here in Newport News ran for 260-something, I believe, on Saturday. You know, could the Dukes run the table in the CAA yet again after doing it last year? I mean, rarely do teams run the table in that league. It's so competitive. But pretty darn impressive start.
Well, my alma mater opened its new facility at Turner Field. Formerly known Turner Field, now Georgia State Stadium.
Yeah, it wasn't as resounding, was it?
And lost to Tennessee State. Thank you, Howard, for beating UNLV and giving some team in Division I a worse loss, or in the FBS a worse loss.
UNLV was a 45-point favorite. It's the largest point spread upset in history. And Howard, coached by Mike London, former UVA and Richmond head coach, who's a 7'5", 7 guy, went to high school here. And good for Mike. I know he's thrilled with that start. And next week, he brings his team back to his alma mater, the University of Richmond, to play. But no, Howard could not have imagined a better debut for the London era.
Well, I can end with, at least I'm not a UNLV graduate this week.
There you go. No, that's going to be a long year for the Rebels.
Well, thanks for joining me this week. Thanks for listening. Next week, David will be flying a little solo, and I'll be back with you guys in 2 weeks.
Sounds great, man.
See ya.